I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. My guest today is Fredrik Hagberg from Sweden. Fredrik, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I guess the first thing I needed to do is ask you, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Closely. It's I've been traveling a lot in Europe, so I heard my name in many different ways, but it's pretty close. It's pronounced Hagberg in Swedish, so pretty close.
I would not be able to pronounce that, so I'm just going to leave it the way an American would pronounce it.
It sounds pretty good.
Okay, I appreciate that. Fredrik, you first came to my attention when I was looking into events in Ukraine in 2014, and I was Facebook friends with Olena Semenyenka, and there were pictures of her and other people I knew in Kiev, and you were in the pictures, and that's how I first got to know you. And then we met in Sweden when I came to speak there. And so I've been meaning to just call you up and talk to you about what you do, because you're an active person in the nationalist scene in Scandinavia and Eastern Europe. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your biography, you know, where you were born, how old you are, where you went to school, and then we can talk about your political activism.
Of course, I'm 29 years old. I was born in a town called Åkersberga, just outside Stockholm. I was just going public school, and until after that, I went to the military service just before they starting to cut it out in Sweden. So I did my military service for 10 months in Sweden. And it's like right after that, I was starting to get into the political scene. And I started working with various security jobs. So basically, I was quite early after my school starting to get into politics and in my security work, which later on I figured out was not a good idea to be politically active and work with security jobs in Sweden. So
you were in the military for a while, and then did you have to leave because of your political activism, or was that something else that I'm getting confused?
Actually, I was in the military service for the mandatory military service we had in Sweden before. And after that, I actually went on doing work in the private sector in Sweden, different security jobs. And I later started to get into the military again. So as I get in, I was first in the military for 2005 to 2006, and then again 2013. And I was in the military service for like seven months the last time before they figured out I was a nationalist in Sweden, which is pretty close to the most evil thing you can do in Sweden.
Right. So basically, because you were concerned with the security of the Swedish people, that made you ineligible to serve in the Swedish military?
Yeah, exactly. They started to they later told me that to the media, it's no problem to be involved with Nordisk Ungdom, the organization I'm head of, and they said no problem to be in that organization. It's what I did and my behavior in public that was bad things. And they mentioned a lot of the YouTube videos I've been in, and my speech in Kyiv City Hall during Maidan was one of the main reasons if they wanted to fire me, because it was racist.
Ah.
And broke the, what you say, the values of the military force in Sweden.
Right. So tell us about Nordic Youth, Nordisk Ungdom. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah. Again, we're pretty close to it.
Pretty close, okay.
Yeah, sound like a good immigrant in Sweden.
Okay, well, that's good. I didn't sound like a total foreigner then. So no. Nordic Youth, tell us a bit about that group, how long it's been around, the kinds of stuff that you do, and so forth.
We started around in 2010, January, so we've been around for 6 years now. This is the 6 years. So we're quite a young organization, I would say, in Sweden. We started around because a lot of us who started the organization had been around in different nationalist organizations in Sweden. And we thought that it was time to change things up. The nationalist work in Sweden was pretty much in a standstill. Everything was always the same thing. No one was moving forward. So we started to, when we started the organization, the first thing we wanted to do was to show people that we're not afraid to try new things. We're not afraid to fail or try maybe crazy things, people say. So we started the organization actually with a Swedish nationalist reggae song, which basically stirred things up in Sweden. So we really early we started to show people the whole mindset of Nordic youth. So that's when we started, and we wanted to really change the view on nationalists in Sweden to make it more mainstream, to make it more up to date. Because we thought that if you're gonna reach out to people in Sweden, to young people in Sweden, we have to adapt a bit to the modern situation and the modern day. So I think we really changed the whole scene of nationalism in Sweden.
What was it like before you came along? Before Nordic Youth, yeah.
Before Nordic Youth, I was starting to be involved in politics in 2005. And you could say that 2005, it's, I think, maybe a year after that, it was the nationalism in Sweden really get a downfall. The only thing that was going on in Sweden was always handing out flyers, which is good if you do it in a good way, but this is was basically the whole concept of being organized in nationalism, was only handing out flyers. And it was stuck in an old rhetorical circle. You could say it was their own political correctness inside the nationalist movement. You couldn't stand out. Yeah, you couldn't say the wrong things. You always have to think about how would the other organizations or the other nationalists think about us if we do this. So we started early to say, we don't care about our other organizations. We do our thing. If you don't like it, that's fine. We'll start. We'll keep on doing it. And I think that's what kept us alive and kept us going, was the feeling that we did our thing. We wasn't afraid to fail. We tried new things. Everything felt good, and you could really see from the start that the members we got was different from before. It was people who never been involved in politics before. It was a new kind of members, I think. So it was a good time. I think it was an exciting time too when we started Nordic Youth.
So how many people are involved now in your group?
Now we started to we have a renewal every year with the member system. The last year we got a member record for one year with 600 members, but mostly supported members, and because we kind of a free before we was kind of a freely group, so basically most active in Stockholm. We had some active members around Sweden and some in Finland and Norway also. I would say that we're not that big a group, but I would say that for an organization with our size, we really do great work. I would say, like you said, we really use our potential in a good way. And I think it's only can go better, because if you look at last year, it's a really good year for us. Unfortunately, it's when it's a good year for nationalists, it's a bad year for Sweden, unfortunately. But
right,
you can see a change in Sweden. You can see a change in Sweden, and that's really fun. And so we're only gonna get bigger.
Yeah. So tell me, what kind of actions do you engage in?
when we started, we wanted to change from the just handing out flyers. So the first thing we said to us was, okay, we're going to make actions on things we see is wrong in society, and we're going to do it fast. We're not going to dwell on it for a long time. We're going to do it fast while it's still being in media. So we do a lot of, like we call it, the direct actions. For instance, a few years ago, there were sexual assault from newcomers, immigrants on Swedish girls in a swim house. And so we went to the immigration asylum center and had it with a banner, just basically told them what we think about them, and throw some symbolic eggs on the building. Just to express our feeling for them, because the media was really quiet about this. And right after we did this action, when you talk about an action, it sounds like a small thing to do, but I think the symbolic action in it is bigger than you can think when you talk about it. But after the action, the sexual assault was all in the media, and they started to talk about it before it was quiet. So I think if we do direct actions against things like the big banners, confront political enemies, not violence, but confront them with their ideas and try to change things up and try to make to give people a feeling, even if it's against us, like about us, or just a feeling, because people in Sweden just go on with their day. They don't think about the situation. They don't care. They don't feel at all. So we want people to start think about the situation. So we do a bit radical actions, like throwing eggs on asylum centers, like street art when we cover people in blood and to make them look like something else and express feelings in visual feelings, mostly on YouTube and image.
So were you involved with the video of Jan Helin? Was that a Nordic Youth operation?
Yeah, that was my organization.
Let me just give a little background on that. You can tell me if I'm correct. Jan Helin is a newspaper editor who was basically publicizing the names of supporters of the Sweden Democrats to try and bring public pressure against them, to basically harm their careers and their social lives. It was an attempt at shaming people into silence because of their political views. Is that correct?
That's correct. He was one of the publishers. A couple of more newspapers did the same thing. So mm-hmm. He was one of the bad guys, you could say.
Yeah, and there's a YouTube video, and I'll provide a link to this in the show notes, where one of your members goes to his door and asks to speak to him. And he reacts with immediate suspicion and anxiety. And I looked at this and I thought, this is brilliant because it's a totally non-threatening thing. The guy just went there, asked to speak to him. But it demonstrated that he is not immune to the consequences of his actions, right? I mean, one of the reasons why people do bad things to other people is they think that it won't blow back and hurt them. And to just make these people in the press who try to harm other people to suppress their political views aware that people can track them down in their own homes and talk to them, it's somewhat intimidating. But it gives them greater realism, and it might actually encourage them to act more responsibly.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really fun because we did kind of a similar action in 2010, the first year we had in Gothenburg. But we went home, to a school teacher who said that he was going to give the children bad grades if he knew they were Sweden Democrats. So a member went to his house and just to ask him questions. and they have still used it today in to describe us, describe our organization. It's like we go around harassing people and intimidate them at their homes.
Right. Whereas the truth is, that's yeah. how the establishment works. They harass and intimidate exactly. people, and they will continue to do it as long as they feel like they are immune to the same treatment.
Exactly.
But once
exactly.
you show them that they are not immune to the same things happening to them, it might actually discourage it. I would hope it would intimidate them into stopping this bad behavior.
Or at least make them feel what it's like to be confronted in that way at their home. The home should be a free zone. You should feel comfortable and safe at your home.
Right.
And exactly what the media doesn't care about. So after our great thing in 2010, they always used this as a harassment. But if you could see around the elections with Sweden Democrats, they always go home to different Sweden Democrats, or before our action against him, they went home to just ordinary people who had said things online when they thought they were anonymous. So they basically escalated from going home to public politicians to go home to private citizens, which it's and that's why we thought it was okay. Let's take it to their home.
Have they backed off on this kind of behavior, or are they still doing it?
I don't think they care. Actually, they didn't mention one thing in the media about this. They just kept silent on it. Not a word in Swedish media.
Right.
Only alternative nationalist media. And actually, it's quite fun because we went close to his home a few years ago. A member put up some posters around his home a few years ago, and then they were all over media saying that we attacked his house.
Right. Well, this is why it's so important for us to have our own media, and I think that the YouTube videos that your people have put out have been very effective at getting the word out. The fact of the matter is that the attacks in Cologne on New Year's Eve would not have gotten out were it not for social media and alternative yeah. media. The sexual assaults in Sweden that were covered up for a couple of years, a lot of that got out because of social media and alternative media.
Yeah, exactly.
We have our own media, and that means that they can't tell lies. And one of the things that I thought was so good about the Helene thing is that if this fellow had just gone to his door alone and knocked on his door and talked to him, it would have been a non-event. But the fact that you had somebody there filming it meant that
exactly.
it was a world event, and also it meant that this Helene guy could not get away with telling lies about it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so if you document these things, you make them much bigger, and you also make yourself somewhat immune to being lied about and having your actions distorted.
Exactly, and that's quite fun, because if he didn't film it, he will probably put it out in the newspaper and said it was harassment and hostile. But we actually got some critic that said it. We were too nice to him.
Of course, you're always going to get critics, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So always some guy. But it's actually quite fun when you think about it. If you didn't publish any film about it, the media would say that we harassed him. Now different people said we weren't too nice to him.
Right.
But I think it's good to show them that we are the better people. We are the better people. And we should always show that to people. We are civilized. We are good people. We don't need to be on their level when we do things.
Exactly.
I think that's a good thing.
The guy who spoke to Helene, I really respect him because he obviously has ice water in his veins. He was really very calm, you know, strong nerves,
yeah.
and handled it very effectively. So I have to applaud that.
Yeah, I was really happy when I see it because actually I was at work at that time and I was really nervous about I saw all the events that could have gone wrong. So I was really happy about the results, and it's really good to see, and he did a really good job.
So tell us about some of the social events that Nordic Youth does. You don't just do activism, you also get together and build community.
Yeah, exactly. We think that the problem in Sweden is not only the obvious immigration and politics, it's also the tradition, the culture and the social events happening in Sweden. We want to make people live the Scandinavian way, to embrace their culture, but the media has tried to rip away from them. So a lot of focus in Nordic Youth is to have social events. We have the Midsummer celebration every year. That's quite big, around 100 people for a couple of years now. And I think that's actually one of my favorite events, because afterwards, when I talk to people who have never been there before, Swedish people, they say that this was the best Midsummer celebration I ever had. It was really good organized, and because people in Sweden basically don't celebrate Midsummer like a traditional way. They used to just go out, hang out with friends at some beach and just getting drunk. Don't care about the tradition and the culture. So we try to bring back the culture to our members and our friends, to show them that our culture is a fantastic thing and it's still alive. Everyone should embrace it. So we have that and Christmas dinners, and different celebration around the year. And we try to have also just normal get-togethers, just to hang out with each other, to build some form of a community inside the society, to make people give them a free space, a safe space to say their opinion, because in Sweden it's a really oppressed country. We don't have freedom of speech. Democracy hardly doesn't work. So we're really oppressed people in Sweden. So we try to give them so much space as they need.
That's great. One thing that I ask people when they talk about demonstrations, and you do put on demonstrations as well, is I always say, well, exactly what are you demonstrating? What are you showing with your when you show up? Because sometimes a demonstration is a demonstration of weakness or a demonstration of disorganization or a demonstration of a lack of a clear vision or message.
Yeah.
So you guys put a lot of thought into your demonstrations generally, and I just want you to share how you go about deciding to put on a demonstration. How do you organize them? How many people do you feel is necessary so it doesn't look like it's a demonstration of weakness? Things like that.
Exactly. We have thought about it from the start. We said, okay, we will not be an organization that do demonstrations, just because of we don't want to look weak. And because if you're gonna have a big demonstration in Stockholm, you have to be like 1,000 people, 500 people at least, to not look bad in the main capital. So when we have tried to demonstrations before and in smaller cities. So when we do demonstrations, it's not the traditional sense of demonstration in Sweden that we have a big parade without demonstrating. We try to do more to mash up the demonstration with quick actions, like we did in central Stockholm when we went to where they meet the asylum seekers, refugees as they call them, to when they come to Stockholm. They had big tents outside Stockholm Central. So we went there with a banner, around 30 guys, or something like that, and flares, and saying that we didn't want them there. We wanted them to go home. But we had a saying that said, "Muhammad Abdullah, go away." So it's not a demonstration in a traditional sense. It's a kind of a quick action that resulted in a demonstration through Stockholm without any problems with the police or the leftists. So you could say that we took over the city center in Stockholm and just could pray and say what we believed in. So we try to mix up the demonstrations with quick actions, just because I don't think we're there yet. I think we need at least 500 people before we do a true demonstration in Stockholm.
A march, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you been influenced at all by groups like Generation Identity, Casa Pound, National Action in Great Britain, and so forth?
Yeah, yes, of course. I would definitely say that. The first thing we did also a bit different. Always Swedish nationalists have always had contacts around Europe, but I think we really took it to another level. We've been around Europe a lot of times. I've been around myself every year, at least one or two trips. So we try to go around and take influence wherever we can find it. If you see Casa Pound, a great thing. Okay, what can we learn from this? We have been meeting them. We have been meeting Generation Identity and took things from them. So definitely, I think all influence that we can use in a good way is a good influence. And so we take it from wherever we can find influence. And we try to be active around Europe just to meet people, to talk to them, to share experience, to learn from them. What have they done that's good? What have they done badly? And just go around Europe, and because I think it's important to also have a context in Europe. Because we can't win this struggle alone. One country cannot rise in Europe by themselves. We need friends all around Europe.
Exactly. So how would you define your own ideology? Do you have an ideology, a worldview?
Like I said, we're Scandinavian nationalists in the social right, I could say.
And yet you are also aware that Europeans have a common history, a common destiny, common enemies, and
yes,
things like that. So
exactly.
You have an ethnic nationalist component to it and a sort of pan-European awareness on top of that.
Yes, of course. Europe is not only divided in small countries or small cities. We're also part of a bigger community. So, like Sweden, for example, we're part of Scandinavia. We're part of the Nordic countries, and we're also part of Europe. And we must know our history. We must know that the European people are our brothers. And the struggle we have in Sweden is not a struggle we have by ourselves. It's a struggle for all of Europe. And I think all of Europe need to cooperate to show the rest of the world that we're a power to believe in. So a power to fear in some ways, especially when you look around the Muslim areas. They need to know that the European people are a force to be reckoned with. And I think Europe has every possibility to raise like a strong position around the world, a position that doesn't need America or Russia. I think Europe is a position that can stay strongly by themselves.
That makes sense. So tell me about your time in Ukraine. That's when you first popped up on my radar.
That's actually something that went really spontaneously, because I think everyone was quite surprised of the events in Ukraine. Everything has happened so quickly. And actually, I was already then suspended from work in my military force under investigation. They called it. So I had a lot of free time. So it was no problem for me to book. We booked a ticket. We made a decision in less than a week. I was in Ukraine, and it's hard to describe the feeling when I got there because it was surrealistic. It was like a movie. Big barricades everywhere. The police. You couldn't see. I didn't see the police until late evening when I talked to people. It's like, where are the police? What's happening here? They really took control of all the city center. It was an amazing thing to see what a people can do when they really need to do it. And so I think it was a real inspiration what's happened in Maidan. And even if we don't have to all agree what's happening now in Ukraine, you can't not see the inspiration what's happening in Maidan in the beginning, because what's happening in Maidan for the first time in the beginning is different one from what's happening now. It was a true inspiration.
So have you followed events in Ukraine since then?
Not as much as I did in the beginning, I honestly can say. I think it's always complicated to follow a war like that in a good way, because you get disinformation from both sides. And I have friends that are, you could say, pro-Russians, and I have friends that are pro-Ukraine. So it's always different scenarios and a different disinformation from all of the sides. So I think it's hard to follow that in a good way when you have a political situation in Sweden you have to focus on also.
Right.
But I think it's important to know that the Ukrainian people deserve the freedom and deserve the right to their own country. And that's why we supported Maidan at the first. So I really hope in the end the Ukrainian people get the government they deserve and get the freedom they deserve.
Yeah, we talked in Sweden about how sad it was that the Ukraine-Russia conflict has been so polarizing within Western nationalist circles.
Yes.
And it's true in the United States and it's true in Sweden too.
Yeah, we had a lot of hard discussion in the beginning with Maidan. Pro-Russians, pro-Ukrainian, really, it was hectic times. But I think everybody has calmed down now, looking a little bit more.
Yeah, I would agree with
from
that.
Over the top.
Yeah, so tell us about your contacts in the Baltic states. I know you go there as well.
Actually, it's funny when you think about it that we always have been traveling around Europe. But it was only first time last year when the Estonian organization, or youth organization, Blue Awakening, I hope I say correctly, because but they contacted us, and because they have a traditional celebration for their Independence Day, the 24th of February. Or they started a new tradition with the torch march. Last year was actually the first time we met them and the first time we got in contact with them. And through the Estonians, we got contacts with the Lithuanians and all the Baltic states, basically. So it was crazy when you think about it, because Baltic states and Nordic countries have always been close. The struggles around, if you look at history. So it's crazy when you think about it that it's 5 years almost before we had some contacts with them at all. But I think you could really feel when you met them at the first time that you share a deep history. You could really, the connection we got with them was good. You could really feel that they're brothers in a brother nation, a brother people. So it was really nice, and we're going back there for 24th of February this year also.
Yeah, I got invited to that too, and I can't come to that, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
I bought tickets to go to Europe. I'm leaving on the 1st of March. And it would be, I wish I had, scheduled it 8 days earlier or so.
Yeah.
But at this point, it would be very expensive to change my tickets. So I think it'll be 2017 before I'm there in Tallinn, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm going to definitely go to that event someday.
Yeah, but they also have, I think it's in November, I forgot the date. They have also a torchlight march in one of the other Baltic states.
Well, I'm going to be back in Europe. Yeah, I'm going to be back in Europe from the 1st of October to the middle of November. And one thing I definitely want to take part in, if it's possible, is the November 11th march that they do in Poland. And you've been to those Poland events, right?
Yeah, it's fourth time now, and it's really amazing.
So tell us about your Poland contacts then, and your time in Poland.
It started a few years back. This was the fourth time. We had some a member who had started had some contacts with the Polish nationalists, and he went there. Actually, the first march, he missed the whole march because they raided the hotel they were living in, and everyone was put in jail over the night. So the first year we went there, actually we missed the march totally. So next year we went back with a bigger crowd, and it was truly amazing. First year I was there, it was around 50,000 people. And it was crazy, it was riots with the police, tear gas in the air. And there was, but it's when you looked at the crowd, it's really years. It's always been a good mix between young people, old people, families, football hooligans, just ordinary people. It's a mix of, you could say, all Poland mixed together. It's a true inspiration. And when you see how the march has grown over the years, it's amazing. I think it's now there were between 100,000 to 150,000 people. So it's truly amazing when you look at how they have evolved. And also now when the Polish government don't know the English words for the political party that's have the power in Poland, actually. Law and justice.
Law and justice, yeah.
Yeah. And when this was the first year they had a march when they had the power in Poland. And the first thing we noticed that, first of all, we were invited to a tour in the parliament. Some of the groups from Europe, for always a big group of European nationalists come to Poland. It's a good place to meet European nationalists. I tour around the parliament to learn a bit more about the Polish parliament and look how they work. And then right before the march, for the first year, the president, they read a letter from the president before the march, where he said that it's really happy to see all the Polish people joining together for this wonderful event. So he really cherished and praised the march before it began. And actually, this was the first march they had without any problems with the police, any clashes. There was no riots. You can hardly see the police. It's no problem. Everything was just nice and beautiful. So you could clearly see that the parliament before the government was really against the nationalists. And right after the elections, everything just went on like it should have always done, nice and calm without the police.
Well, that's really great news. I'm so impressed with all the Poles that I've met recently in the nationalist scene. And yeah. There's a wide variety.
Yeah, big variety, yeah.
But yeah, they're all very serious people, and they've all been very welcoming and very helpful. My second book, New Right versus Old Right, has now been translated into Polish, and it's going to come out sometime this year in Poland. So I'm very excited about that.
Good. Yeah.
So have you spent any time in Hungary?
Yeah, I've been a few times. They had this festival, Magyar Sziget. So I've been a few times to the festival there. Also a great festival with a lot of culture, a lot of different nationalist groups around Europe, different nationalists from Hungary. It's really good people to meet, and really hospitality. And so I really want to go back to Hungary once more, at least this year.
Yeah, I've spent a bit of time there now, and it's very exciting how unified the country feels as compared to a country like the United States, where most people don't trust each other anymore. Diversity has so corroded the American polity, so corroded American culture. And, of course, the individualism that's always been endemic to America has really been corrosive, too. But now you just don't feel like there's any social solidarity at all amongst Americans.
That's the culture they want.
Yeah.
Of all the Western countries.
Exactly. And in Hungary, I witnessed little acts of courage, basically, or what looked like courage to an American, but were just totally casual. Like, I remember I was sitting in the sidewalk cafe, and there were the only time that, that I saw people who look like Syrian refugees or wherever they came from. While I was in Budapest the last time, the only time I saw people who looked like that was at a sidewalk cafe. There were two men who were sitting outside and hadn't bought anything. They were just sort of loitering there. And the guy who was behind the counter at the cafe, after a while, just went out and asked them to leave. And an American would never do that. They'd be too intimidated by that. Yeah. And the reason why they'd be intimidated is that they could basically assume that if there was an incident with these people, that no other Americans would come to their aid, right? Whereas this Hungarian fellow knew that the doorman at the hotel next door, the guy who was delivering things to the mall next door, just a passerby on the street, if there were an incident, he had the sense that his fellow countrymen would have his back. And just seeing little things like that made me realize that, first of all, how unhealthy American society is, and probably it's true in England and most other Western countries, how atomized and unhealthy. Yeah. It's very, very sad. And to see that kind of healthy social solidarity in these Eastern and Central European countries, like in Poland too, is very impressive. And I have that feeling about the people I met from the Baltic states, from Lithuania and Estonia.
Yeah, it's most definitely. If you go to my favorite places in Europe, it's the Baltic states and or in the Eastern Europe, because you really you could feel a different mentality there. You feel safe on when you go out at night in a different way than in Stockholm. You can really sense that the people are more true to their culture, to the history from the people. They're more. It's a completely different mentality if you go anywhere from Sweden, basically. So that's one thing, because what I love about traveling around Europe. Just to refresh the powers to bear with the craziness in Sweden.
Yeah, it was really very sobering to me when I realized that I felt more at home and comfortable in Budapest, where people speak a radically different language that I cannot understand, than in New York City. Right? Which is my own country, in quotes, right?
Yeah, I don't leave any country in Europe without thinking, okay, maybe I should move here instead. Always the same thought. And when you just put a take one step in Stockholm Central after being away, just want you to go back, because the situation in Sweden is so depressing. So that's, I think the trips is needed to refresh your powers, to keep this courage up, because the situation in Sweden is so bad, but it's being better. Yeah, you see how everything's turning now, so it's good.
So let's talk about that. Are you optimistic for the future of Europe, for the future of Sweden? What do you think is going to happen in 2016?
I think 2016 is going to be an extremely important year before the elections in 2018, because now you can see how different parties is trying to adopt the mindset of Sweden Democrats, the mindset that people are hoping that they should have had a long time ago. So I think it's going to be a lot of craziness in the government, a lot of ideas adopted from Sweden Democrats and used in crazy ways, because they haven't thought about it enough. So I think it's a lot of populistic ideas is going to go out from the government. But I'm optimistic, actually, because you could see today in the polls, Sweden Democrat was the second biggest party. And that's even after all the populistic ideas from the rest of the parties. They didn't win anything about it. So I think it's going to be an important year, because everything is going to grow. The struggle against the immigration problem in Sweden is going to grow. The immigration, they say, is going to be at least as big as last year. So the people are going to get more and more angry. So I think a lot of things can happen in Sweden both good and bad things, of course. But I think it's going to be it's really important year for the future.
I think that Sweden's immigration problem is probably equal to or greater than the German problem, and that's saying a lot. The numbers aren't quite as high, but Sweden is maybe one-tenth the size of Germany in terms of population.
Yeah. Sweden is, if you look at the population, it's really crazy when you look at the numbers. Sweden is really maximized, always trying to get a world record in stupidness, I think.
That's what they call being a humanitarian superpower, right?
Yeah, yeah. If this is a superpower in some way, I should probably just want to go back to Africa. Use the terms of if you come from Africa.
Right.
Yeah. So this is, yeah, this is the craziness in Sweden has no limits. And I think it's kind of good that it turns so crazy in this quick way as it do, because people need to have awakening slap from the state. And I think the immigration problem is now just starting to slap people around so much they starting to wake up and understand this, that this doesn't work. So it's kind of a good way that everything is changing so quickly in Sweden. Before it's the immigration increased slowly, but now it's run out of control.
Yeah, I think that the quicker these things happen, the more people will be shocked by it, and that plays into our hands.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the metaphor about the frog in the frying pan. Or if you just turn up the heat slowly, it doesn't gonna feel if you're gonna start boiling.
Right.
So I think it's exactly what's happening in Sweden. Everything has gone so slowly for a long time that people are just adapted to the situation. But now it's escalating so fast that people can't ignore it anymore.
So tell me, are you open about your views within your family, within your social circles? Do the people who you went to high school with, do they know you as a nationalist?
Yeah, I think it's when I went to school for my old school friends. I don't have many of them left, not because I'm a nationalist, but just grew apart.
Right.
But I'm always been open in when I grew up, what I believed in. My family is, they don't share my point of view. We all know my point of view and they don't share it, but we don't talk about it that much.
Have you been noticing in recent months that there has been some openness to discussing this, these sorts of issues?
Yes, not only if you look around in families, look at workplaces, friends, everywhere. People are really starting to get to know about the problems now, because the problems is popping up everywhere. You can't be safe anywhere in Sweden now.
Right.
So you can see a completely change from just a couple of years ago. Now people are openly say they're Sweden Democrats. Now people can talk about that in the workplace in a different way than before. So if people are really getting to be afraid about what's going to happen in Sweden, and they're noticing the problems in a different way than before.
Well, that's a very good sign.
Yeah, a change in Sweden is coming. I think it's got to be a lot worse before it's getting better, but people are starting to get angry about it.
So tell me, what are your connections with, say, Norway and Denmark and the other countries that are closest to you in Scandinavia? Do you cooperate a lot with nationalists there? Are there similar groups in Denmark or Norway to Nordic Youth?
Actually, we tried to start up Nordic Youth in different countries, in around the Nordic countries, because we see ourselves as a Scandinavian organization, because we feel that Scandinavian people are the same people, we have the same language, same culture. So we try to incorporate in with them, we try to raise some kind of Nordic Youth in Norway, in Denmark. But it's hard when you're based in Stockholm or in Sweden to reach out to them. actually. So we don't have so much cooperation there. We have a few members around the Nordic countries, mostly actually in Finland. So we have members around, but not so much cooperation with other groups.
It's true that in Finland, Swedish is a second language, correct? Does that make it easier for you to have interactions with the Finns as opposed to the Norwegians and the Danes?
No, I think it's the Finns we're talking with in Sweden is actually like Swedish Finns.
Okay, ethnic Swedes.
Mostly. Yeah, mostly. And when you talk to, you could go to Norway and talk to them. We understand each other. We basically have the same language in Norway and Denmark.
Okay.
It's like in Sweden. So it's a bit rough, but if you spend some time in Norway or Denmark, you can understand them. You can talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Some better than others, but basically the same language.
Do you have any contacts as far afield as Iceland?
No. That's been a bit harder,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately.
Is there any nationalist scene in Iceland at all? I never hear from Icelanders.
Actually, I don't hear from them also, but I don't think they need it as much as we others do. But I think they're nationalists. I recall we got some member from Iceland before, but no active member.
Right. Well, they're just living the nationalist dream. They don't need to be too conscious about it yet. And let's hope they never need to.
Hopefully not, because I think it's too hard for the immigrants to get there illegally. So that's a good thing for them. But yeah. I think it's. I hope they're never going to experience what we do.
Right, right. Well, I hope no other European nation experiences what Sweden does. I mean, Sweden has really been the vanguard of ethnomasochism and terrible self-destructive policies. So.
Oh, it's yeah. They're trying to blame the whole what happened in Germany and the different cities in Sweden, also with the sexual assaults. They try to blame. It's like, oh, it's always been a problem in Sweden. It's always been a problem like this in Sweden. It's all and also got as far as a leftist politician. Went out in the media, said that one time when he was drunk, like 10 years ago, he touched the ass of a woman in a bar when he was drunk. And he said that he didn't feel any problem with it. And it's because of our culture, he said. So blame his own stupidness and on the Swedish culture instead of just being a douche.
Right.
So it's so weird situation in Sweden. The leftist girls, the feminists try to explain that it's always been a problem in Sweden. This is not a new thing. And the leftist feminist guys say that, I've been a victim to this too because I touched women in a bar. It's a cultural thing. It's the culture's fault. It's not my fault.
Right. Well, I have to say that probably the evilest movie I've ever seen was The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, because basically it's a complete inversion of reality, portraying Swedish men as rapists and the victims of their rapes being innocent immigrant women.
Yeah.
It's a complete inversion of reality if you look at the actual statistics. And yet this guy who wrote this was the head of Expo, right? He's one of the people who was working hardest to suppress Swedish nationalism and just giving a completely inverted and consciously inverted image of the truth about sexual assault, rape, murder, and things like that in Sweden.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I really hated that movie. So propaganda from the start.
Yeah. But it really reveals that you're not just dealing with deluded people. There are a lot of deluded people in the left, but the core of the left are consciously deceiving people. They're consciously lying. They're really evil people. And there's a hardcore of truly evil and malevolent people in your society and ours, that we can persuade people we can persuade some people to our views. We can sort of calm others down so they're indifferent to us, or you can neutralize them. But once you do that, there's going to be a hard core of people that we just have to politically defeat. And,
exactly.
You know, I think that the tide really is turning. And Sweden has been a vanguard of decadence, and it might be a vanguard of renewal.
I couldn't hope for anything more. Because the madness has gone on too far. We can't be more feminist. We can't be more humanitarian superpower. We can't take it anymore. If something doesn't change soon, I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. But something has to change very soon. And I think it's going to happen also. Because if you look at what's happening in society now in Sweden, change is coming.
Well, Fredrik, this has been a really good conversation, and that's a really nice way to end it. Change is coming.
Yeah.
So I hope this is just the first of many talks, and I'll be seeing you again in Sweden, I'm sure, sometime this year. So, or maybe we'll meet in one of the other countries. Maybe we'll meet in Poland or in the Baltic States somewhere.
Somewhere in Europe.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it's been great talking to you, and I hope you'll be back on Countercurrents Radio again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.